Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Hello and welcome to episode 178 of the Proper Mental Podcast. And my guest this week is one of my favourite people in the world. It is Hannah Phillips, who is a mother and a runner, a writer, a speaker and a trainee psychotherapist. And Hannah is, of course, a returning guest. She first appeared back on Proper Mental at episode 110. And in that episode, we covered her early experiences with OCD, her relationship with alcohol, getting sober and hitting crisis point shortly after giving up the booze. And I reached out to Hannah to invite her back on for a very specific conversation. For episode 177, I spoke to Joe Griffin, who is a psychologist and the co-founder of the Humor Givens approach to psychotherapy. It was a wonderful conversation, and I was very taken both with Joe and the therapeutic approach that he co-created. And I wanted to dive a bit deeper into all of that. And I thought it might be cool to explore the system from a couple of different sides. So maybe with a therapist, someone who is working with the system, or with someone who's experienced the other side and received this type of therapy. And Hannah is both, because a couple of years back, after coming within hours of taking her own life, Hannah was referred to a Human Givens therapist. She didn't know what it was at the time, she just knew that it was therapy. But she credits these sessions with both saving and then changing her life. And after getting back on her feet, she began training to be a Human Givens therapist. It was actually when she was on first time, episode 110, she mentioned the Human Givens system and kind of put them on my radar. So this episode's a lovely full circle moment, really. And we chat about the therapy that she received, why she needed it and how it helped. We chat about the different courses that she's been doing since then and how she's implementing everything that she's been learning. And we have a good old catch up and we chat about the work that she's doing around men's mental health in her local community and her upcoming ultramarathon, and it's just all lovely, lovely stuff. Hannah is one of my favourite people, and I'm so proud and so grateful that she's my mate, and it was just wonderful to chat to her about all the things that she's doing. She is a constant source of inspiration to me, and she's just on a one-woman mission to change the world, and you just wouldn't bet against her. She's incredible. Go back to episode 110 if you want to know more about her backstory. Then check out episode 177 to hear from Joe Griffin and how he started the Human Givens. And then this episode will drop in really very nicely. But even if you don't want to do any of those things, that's fine too. This episode will still be a lovely listen. And I tried to kind of structure it so that it can stand alone as well as slotting in with these other episodes. Hannah does all sorts of different things, which means she has all sorts of different social media accounts. There's links to all of them in the episode notes. There's the links there for her website too. Go and give her a follow, see what she's up to, see how she's trying to change the world. And if you enjoyed this conversation and you think, do you know what, I wish I could have watched that, well, you could if you'd have signed up to become a proper mentalist by joining the Patreon community that's attached to the show. It's just £3 a month and it just helps me to cover the basic costs and keep the show going. You get all sorts of cool stuff. You get early access, you can submit questions to guests, you can request videos from the back catalogue, but really the most important thing is you just allow me to keep this show going. So if you get anything from this episode, or maybe you've listened before and you've got something from those episodes and you think, do you know what, I've had my £3 worth here, I'm going to help this guy out, well, there's a link in the episode notes. It's dead easy to sign up and you can cancel anytime you like. And this is episode 178 of the Proper Mental Podcast with Hannah Phillips. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy. Here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast, and I am joined today by Hannah Phillips. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It is so lovely to catch you, mate. It's been a little while, huh?
I know. I'm gutted we're not in Pembrey Park wandering around with microphones.
I know. Yeah, getting lost and hiding from the wind and all that. Yeah. We're doing it official this time. Doing it official. The best way to start, I think, is to explain, well, explain to people listening why you're back again, but also to explain to you, because you're so game that I just texted you last week and said, I've got an idea. Do you want to come back on? And you said,
don't
yes. And
say
here we
I'm
are.
Game. People will get the wrong idea. There's already many wrong ideas about me floating around on Instagram because of the blinking boob photo, but I'll explain that later. We won't go into
yeah,
that now.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that another time. That could be for your hat. We'll save that for your hat trick appearance.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing. Balls.
So, but yeah, in a nutshell, so people know what's going on. Last week, I recorded a wonderful episode with a guy called Joe Griffin from the Human Givens. He's one of the co-founders of the Human Givens approach to psychotherapy. And I was really taken by Joe. I was really taken by the system. And obviously, I only know about them because of you, because we talked about it when you were on the podcast the first time.
Yeah.
And I was so blown away by this system. I kind of wanted to dig into it a bit more. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be good to chat to someone who's been on the receiving end of this therapy? And then I thought, oh, wouldn't it be really good to speak to someone who could be delivering this type of therapy? And then I thought, do you know what? I know one person who can tick both those boxes. So here we are, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were on last time, we did this big deep dive into you, and we did the childhood stuff and we did all of that stuff. So if anyone is more interested in that, they can go and listen to that episode. But for
there's loads of stuff about me everywhere, so yeah, we don't need to cover that today.
You can't move for it. Yeah. But just so this isn't completely out of left field, could you give us a very quick overview, bring us up to speed with how you ended up starting therapy?
Problem at all. In 2021, I got really very poorly. I had recently given up alcohol, which I thought was going to be the answer to absolutely everything. This is the message I always try to get out there now, that if you give up something that you've used as a crutch for a really long time, it turns out you're absolutely screwed in every other way. So I gave up alcohol and thought, and just kept thinking, well, my life is not wonderful. In fact, it's more of a shit show than it was 3 months ago when I was knee deep in Pinot Grigio. So I got really poorly, and I was really fortunate enough to be given some free human givens therapy by a charity called Big Moose. And I had 4 sessions, which I credit them with saving my life. But the big thing was that it changed my life. And the key to changing lives is that it saves it on its own then. And I think we go really fast into the world of let's save everyone, let's change the mental health system, let's sort men's mental health out as much as we can. But we're missing the little bits, and it's the little bits that make the big bits. And that was the key for me. And I had these 4 sessions with an amazing therapist called Graham Lazelle, which you should have on your podcast too. And my whole perspective had changed in those sessions. My whole tooling mechanisms changed. Everything changed quite quickly.
Wow.
And I was just absolutely blown away by it.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that's lovely. Where am I going to jump in and start with this? When you went to that therapy, had you had therapy before? Let's go there.
No.
Had you?
No. So I've been in the mental health system a really, really long time. But I'd never had counselling or a therapist or anything. And this is how it came about. I had spoken to Jeff and Chloe in Big Moose, and I'd said something really flippant along the lines of, I wish we were like Americans, because Americans all have nail technicians and therapists, and it's the most normal thing in the world. Because at that point, I just kept thinking, if I could just speak to someone. Now, why I didn't put 2 and 2 together, I will never know. But we don't when we're poorly, do we? You know, 2 and 2 could be 4.6 million for all we know. Why I didn't put 2 and 2 together, but I just wanted someone to offload to firstly. And then I felt like I needed some guidance. And I think the beauty of human givens is that it lets you do the guiding, but it's got the stabilizers on for you. That's the best way I can describe it, that you're doing the work, but you've got some stabilizers on with this therapist. So,
yeah. So that, if you think back to that first session, was that, did you do that online, was that over the phone, how did
yeah so it was just after the pandemic, so everything was still very much online, and I was really, really, one of my things which we worked on as well without even Graham knowing we were working on, which is the beauty of human givens, you can apply it to absolutely everything. I've got real issues with tech and real issues on the phone, So when he rang me, I put off the phone call for a while. And then he rang me to say, so they do a sort of like debrief to see if I was going to, you know, if we were going to work together well. And he phoned and he said, right, I'm Graham. What's going on? And I just broke down on the phone call, like the pre-phone call now. I was in such a state. And he was like, he calmed me down, which was amazing. Like, he should have been paid for the phone call as well, to be fair. And he was like, listen, we can do this, but we're going to have to do it together, you know. And he said the words to me, you are not broken. He was like, you just need a little bit of perking up. So he didn't say perking up, that's not his language, but you just need some perking up. And I'm going to hold your hand through this, but you have got to do some work. And I'm quite conscientious. So the minute he said, you're going to have to do some work, I was like, I will do anything for this man at this point because I want to be better and I want to be the best he's had. You know, I read something the other day that someone had written, like, it's important that I'm the best client my therapist has got. And that was very much me. I was like, I want to be the best he's had. I want to be the success story. And I was just so desperate to be well at this point. And I think that's another thing to remember. You've got to hit that point where you're like, it's easier to get better than it is stay still.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? And when you're in the depths of something and there's no, like, you just can't see a way out. There's no tangible way out. And there's a frustration to that, right? Because you're like, I want help. I've read the books. I want to do the work, but I don't know what the work is.
Yeah.
And if someone comes along and says, like, oh, well, you know, I will give you this work to do.
Yeah.
Right, now I can actually do something. I can get started. I can try and fix this somehow.
Yeah. And it's like, and I think the joy of Human Givens is that it's all based on a needs. It's based on a needs approach that we've all got these human needs, that emotional needs, sorry, we all got human needs, but we've got these emotional needs that need to be met in balance. And I have tried to pick every hole in this CV because I'm like, it cannot be this simple. It cannot be that my needs are not being met, so I'm poorly. But it is. And I was upset by that for a while. I was like, no, I'm the exception to the rule. I must be worse than everybody else. This is not as simple as me going, oh my God, my status need is not being met here, so I'm poorly. But it really is. And obviously we're not talking about big trauma here. We're just talking about when you're not well and you have no idea why you're not well.
Yeah.
Which many of us have found ourselves in that position. And I think I just kept saying, why do we not know these things? Why do we not know these things?
Yeah, why is it not taught in schools and all that sort of stuff? Yeah. So how do we, I'm trying to ask questions here, Han, without kind of digging too deep into, obviously, you know, going through therapy is like, you know, it's a private thing, right, between you and your therapist. So I'm kind of skirting around that a little bit. But how did you start to identify which of your needs weren't being met? Like, how did this start to make sense? Because you said four sessions and that's so quick. So that you must have hit the ground running with this, right? So how does this start getting pieced together for you?
So I think the important bit for us to remember with me, and I'm a big, and I keep shouting about this, that everybody is completely individual, whatever journey we're on, you know, and we love a tick box, we love a label, don't we? But the important bit to remember for me was I had taken alcohol away. I had taken alcohol from me, and I'd been using alcohol to hit every need. So I was a little bit lost in the sense that we've just come back from a pandemic. I was back in a job that I probably had lost a bit of passion for. Everything changes when you get rid of alcohol. Like, your social circle changes, your community changes, your status completely changes. My emotional intimacy changed because, and I hope Scott doesn't mind me saying this, but our sort of social life revolved heavily around alcohol. So when we took that alcohol away, we had to find some common ground. It was a whole new ball game. So once I realized this, I was like, I can start working on this now. I can start to sort my community out. I can start, you know, my meaning and purpose will change. My whole direction had to change. And one of the important things for me was remembering that alcohol meets a lot of needs for people, whether they're an alcoholic or not. Whether they've got a, you know, like, if you look at the people that go out on a Friday night with their friends and that's their night out, and they use alcohol during that night, out, you know, or some of them do. They might not even do it, but if that's their night out, alcohol hits a lot of needs. You know, you've got a community with alcohol. You've got your status with alcohol. You know, your attention need is met. Your emotional intimacy is often met, you know. So it was like I had to just rebuild everything. And for a long time, I blamed like a lot of what had gone on as in my childhood and things like that. My dad wasn't great. He was, you know, a lovely guy, but not a great, you know, he had his own, I think, like, I've done the work now. He was probably massively ADHD without us even knowing. So all these learning things have been hard to come to terms with as well. But for a long time, I blamed my childhood. And I think we do that as well, because we were sold that for a while, weren't we? Any trauma is from the past. You know, you're not looking at the trauma that you experience every single day. And that was a learning curve that, yeah, we go through things every single day that will wobble our needs. So it was just a case of going backwards and going, oh my God, one need is not being met here. And it was just fascinating for me. So simple and fascinating. And world-changing, you know, mind-blowingly world-changing for me. So.
Yeah. I that's really interesting to chat about the parenting stuff, right? Because we do. There's so many people that, like, things happen in their childhood and they might use the trauma word that gets banded around quite a lot, you know? And, like, parenting, as a parent, if you try and be over-conscious of causing chaos with your kids, you can't do it, right? No. You just second guess yourself. Yeah. and all the rest of it. And I just think it's like a pendulum, right? So
absolutely,
you work out the stuff that your parents did that kind of like made you think and feel a certain way, so you go, right, I'm going to do the opposite, and we take the pendulum all the way, and all you're doing is like solving one set of problems and giving your kids another set of problems. But there's no way to do it, to be a parent, without something, is there at all?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think another thing the human givens does is this sort of solution focus. So we look forward all the time. So the first thing I said to Graham, I was like, I had a bit of a rough childhood, you know, and he was like, I don't care. And he didn't mean it in an aggressive or arrogant way. He was like, that doesn't matter, because you were here today. Everything that's gone on has made you the person you are today. So we reframed a lot of that. Like, yeah, I had a rough, you know, who doesn't have a rough childhood? We've all got something to pin back on our parents. It's just the way the world works. My girls will say, it doesn't matter how much work you do, my girls will say things that I ruined their life at some point. You know, it's just going to happen. It just happened. There's a poem, isn't there? Something like, my parents fucked my life up, or something like that. Yeah. But you look forward, you reframe it. You go, actually, yeah, but look what I've done despite that. And look what I can do despite that, you know, and look what you've come through. And it sounds really cliche, but, you know, when you look back, like, I do exercises with people now about their like resources. And like, everything you've done is a resource, you know, it's a learning curve. You put it in that resource backpack and off you go. And I'll say to people, I want you to tell me three things you're proud of, but you need to really dig deeper. So if you're going to tell me your kids, why are you proud of your kids? Because we all do that, don't we? We go, oh, I'm proud of my kids. Why? Because they're mine, you know? No, I'm proud of my kids because they're nice little girls. Why are they nice little girls? Because I've done a good job. And we don't do that, do we? We don't praise, we don't take any time to go, actually, I did a good job here. We'll take loads of time to go, I did a shit job here. I cocked up here. I could have done this. Because that's the way our brain is completely wired to do. We've got to go to the negative, otherwise we wouldn't have evolved. You know?
Yeah. And to sit in the positive, right? To actually sit and feel it. So like you say, if something bad happens, we'll feel that. We'll feel every inch of it.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
If something good happens, it's very much like, oh yeah, that's great. And then we move on quick, right? Yeah. We don't bask in these little glories.
No.
Yeah. We're a mess, aren't we?
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown at the moment. And like her thing was like, the most wholehearted people are grateful. So I make the kids, every time we get in the car for school in the morning, we do three things we're grateful for. Right. And I would have thought that was the wankiest thing to have ever done a couple of years ago. I would have gone, oh, do I think I am trying to do this? But having seen the results of this, it's phenomenal. And we're literally taking 5 minutes to really think about something. So like the first few weeks, Blossom, who's nine, just kept going, my friends, my family, my house, right? My friends, my family, my house. This went on for about 3 weeks. And then one day she went, my friends, my family, and then I'm going to Connie's tonight. And I was like, amazing, we're getting somewhere. And now she does three different ones. And it's like some days we get in our car and the last thing I can think to do is like perk up because they've been absolute twats and it's been a horrible morning and I want to kill them, not ask them what they're grateful for. But we do this little exercise and I know everybody's a bit buoyant from it. All of us, you know? I mean, yesterday Kiki said to me, I'm grateful you poked me in the eye this morning. So she still hasn't quite got it. But at least she's working on it, you know?
Yeah, that's it. It'll come. Yeah.
We do. Go on.
Well, it's thinking of these things for ourselves, right? So like one of the most useful lessons I've ever had from a therapist is my current therapist said to me once that you can only, if someone gives you a compliment, it will only truly land if you believe it to be true. So that's why someone can say, you know, like, oh, Han, you're so good at this. And you might go, oh, yeah, thanks. But if you don't believe it, it doesn't matter, right? No, it doesn't matter. No. So we have to build that core, you know, love for ourselves, you know, that core. I mean, that sounds wanky too, doesn't it? But we have to believe these things to be true. And then when someone says to you, oh, you're really good at this, and you say, well, yeah, I am. Yeah, I am. Thank you for noticing, you know. And
yeah.
That's a great way to build that in ourselves, I think. Start them young.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I just think, so as another example, my little Blossom, she said, my friend said to me the other day that when she speaks to the other girls, they either like sort of giggle at her or just sort of nod their head. She said, but when I speak to you, I feel like you really understand me. And I was like, that's a lovely compliment, Blossom. You know, how does that make you feel? Like not putting my therapist thing on. She was like, well, I felt really nice. And I was like, good, because you're a lovely little girl. And that's a really lovely thing. And, you know, instead of sort of being boastful about things, let's just make it more natural that, yeah, you know, you are a lovely little girl. Well done for listening to your friend. Because that's all it is. It's just listening. That's all she's done is listened and understood.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's important. We don't know what these kids are, you know, other kids might not get mums that are therapists and listening from in the house. We don't know, do we? So...
No, that's it, isn't it? And they spend so much time, especially as they get older, like away from us, you know, going to school and stuff like that. And when they're on their own, even when they're young, navigating that school day, for that whole day, they have their own thoughts and they have other people around them saying things to them and behaving in a certain way. And that's often when, you know, how many people I've had on this podcast and they talk about how they learn to think and feel about themselves at school.
Yeah.
You know, like that's where so much of this stuff comes from, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know? And then my thing is then, right, if we're thinking about these little people's needs, so like her community need would have been hit, her status need would have been hit, her attention need would have been hit, probably her emotional intimacy need would have been hit because she feels like she's got a best friend there, her security because all the other needs are being met, you know, like it just all feeds in all of the time.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, back to those needs, you're having your therapy sessions and you're starting to understand this system of emotional needs. How do you go about getting your needs met? Did you like, was it as formulaic as like you wrote them down and went and found things? Or how do you start to, because there's, you know, there's the theory to this makes so much sense, right?
Yeah.
But theory doesn't always fit like we want it to in day-to-day life. And so how do you start to put your learnings into practice?
This comes back again to the tick box malarkey. Like I'm a big fan. When I gave up alcohol, I downloaded the app and I watched the days go and I still watch the days go. And I think the thing with self-development is that there's no way of measuring it. You know, you can journal all you want and things, but there's nothing that can, you know, like when you go for a run, you've got Strava, you know, when you're getting faster, you know, when you're going further. With your self-development, there are no markers. It's only when, oh, I feel better today, or actually I'm wobbling today. So what started to happen then was obviously when you have human given therapy, they do not put these needs down like this to you. Okay, they might mention them, but you're not. It's not an educational type of therapy. This is things that your therapist is holding in the background now. So it was when I started to learn about it. When I went knees deep then, I was like, right, I'm fully into this because this is amazing. Because if my life can be changed in like 4 hours, like what? Why is the NHS not like screaming this out? So when I started learning about the needs, that's when things got better for me again. And I think that's a shame with the only, and I'm not knocking the system. The system is amazing. But I feel like the education bit is as vital as the therapy bit sometimes. So if I'm wobbling, if I feel terrible, first of all, I look at the table. I've got this metaphor now where I'm a table, where I've got four legs. One is nutrition, one is movement, one is water, and one is sleep. And all of those legs need to be balanced and strong for my mindset, my tabletop, to be okay. So anything that lands on that tabletop has got half a chance of being, you know, even if it's a need not being met, because I'm physically, the pillars are quite strong. So first of all, I go through those four things immediately. I'm like, have I drunk water? Did I sleep okay last night? Could I pick something a bit better to eat? And have I moved? And I'm not talking running marathons. I'm talking 15 minutes outside, you know, to start off with. And if they are all okay and I'm still wobbling, then I'll go through what need is not being met. And it's a difficult process. Like, especially so if your status need has been wobbled, you know, say you haven't been invited somewhere that you think you should have been invited to, or something, you know, someone didn't tag you in Facebook, or, you know, any tiny thing like that. You literally have to go to the depths of the worst place of yourself to go, right, my status need has been wobbled here, my attention need is being wobbled. And then it's a case of 9 times out of 10, once I know what's going on, I feel better already anyway. If this continues, it's a case of, right, how am I going to get this need met? Do I need to, you know, go and speak to my friends and say, look, I felt a bit left out. Is there any chance you can remember me next time? Or, you know, it's about, and it's constantly about being the better person all the time. And I don't mean in terms of other people. I mean, in terms of yourself. It's about knowing your values, knowing your needs and how you get them met. And it's just work. And I get why people don't want to do it. I totally. Someone said to me in a workshop a couple of weeks ago, this is a lot. And I was like, it is a lot. But I think when you get to a point where people like me and you have been, and you want to climb out of that cave, you will try whatever you can to get out. So,
yeah, there's a real vulnerability to it. And I kind of touched on this when I spoke to Joe. And first of all, once if you identify a need that's not being met, then it takes a certain amount of vulnerability to hold your hands up to that, right? Yeah. Maybe to your role in that, but also to do something scary to get that need met. And that was something I was really, really interested in. And we touched on it, but, you know, I only had him for an hour, so we couldn't deep dive. And I'm really proud of this phrase I used with him, Hans. I'm just any excuse to use it again. But using as an example, like the emotional intimacy, and in the Human Givens, in the book, it says having someone in your life who knows you warts and all, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you want someone to know and love you warts and all, you've got to show them your warts.
And absolutely.
That's my my phrase. And that's hard. We don't like getting our warts out, do we?
As I literally say, so when I'm explaining this need, I go, it's the type of person that you would feel like comfortable scratching your bum around, you know? And I remember great. So my emotional intimacy need had been wobbled quite badly when we took the alcohol away. And Graham had said to me, a lot of people only get their need met by their dogs, right? And I was like, oh my God, yeah, I would actually scratch my bum in front of my dog. But I might not scratch it in front of Scott at the moment, you know? So it is, yeah, you've got to get your warts out, and it's uncomfortable and painful. And if you find that one person you can do that with, you're sort of winning, definitely.
Yeah, I saw a reel the other day, and it was two comedians talking about farting in front of your partner. Yeah. And one of them said, you say, when you tell your partner you love them, you're saying I love you with your mouth, but when you fart in front of them, you're telling them you love them with your ass.
That's cute. I like that.
There's something in that, right?
Yeah.
There's something in that.
Yeah.
So you're working all this stuff out, you're starting to feel a bit better, you're starting to feel like change is happening. Is that why you decided to go and do the course, to go and be trained to be a therapist?
Yeah. So again, if you look at, I loved my job at Welsh Athletics. I loved my time there. I just felt it had run its course with me. I am still, to this day, still working and still really passionate about people running. I'm doing lots of bits. Because again, if you add these needs to things, running meets a lot of needs. You know, social running meets an awful lot of needs. But I just felt like I wasn't doing anything quick enough. It's a national governing body, it's funded, so everything is a little bit slower, and I'm really impatient, and I am working on that as well, because it doesn't do me credit all the time. But but I just felt like I could do a lot more. And again, status, I came back off maternity leave. There was a bit of a new team. You know, I'd done my bit. I was sort of like old hat at it. Community had changed. So I was like, I think you've got two choices here. You can go and make a difference, or you can stay here out of comfort. And I was just, again, I just kept saying, why do people not know these things? Why didn't, you know, I'm a clever kid. Like, I went to uni. I'd like to think I'm probably the most self-aware person in the world. I know what's going on, and I still didn't know these basic things. And I just felt like I've got quite a good voice, as in I use my voice quite well, I'd like to think. And I thought, you can make a difference here. Like, you can change people's lives. Now, I already felt like I'd done that with running, because I'd written the book and I'd got loads of people out running, and it was such a lovely feeling. And I thought, but I was in like a shitstorm of depression, in and out, you know, for most of my adult life. I was an alcoholic, if I'm totally honest. I was an alcoholic. And I just thought, I made a difference then. How much difference can I make with a clear head and a clear conscience? Because obviously I've worked through all this shit. And I this is what I did then. I left my job at Welsh Athletics and I was like, you've got three values here, three core values. One, is it making a difference? Two, is it around every, you know, integrity and everything you believe in? And three, are you enjoying yourself doing it? And that's every bit of work I've taken on in the last, since April, so nearly a year, has hit those three buttons. Because someone said to me the other day, you're confusing the market, you're doing so many different things. And I was like, if you scrape back everything, I'm not. It comes under all those three things. They might have different headings, but everything is making a difference, done with integrity and wholeheartedness, I suppose, and I'm enjoying myself. So... yeah. It's a good way to live. Like, I've been really, really lucky that it landed with me and that I've got the drive that I have to make the difference, you know, and not just, and that's a selfish thing as well, because I am thoroughly enjoying myself doing all these things. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big one, isn't it? Like, enjoying what you do. Like, yeah. For me, I'd kind of flip that. That would be my first one, you know, like, cause it, I do think that when, especially when it comes to work, we kind of, there's almost like an acceptance that there is an element of work that you shouldn't enjoy. And that's not to say that, you know, crikey, we all have shit days. We all have days when, because I hate that narrative as well, right? I hate that whole thing of like, oh, if you go self-employed and you have your own business, then, you know, people use it as an excuse to be workaholics. They go, well, I love my job, so I'm going to work 60 hours a week. And it's like, I really love my job, but I still prefer hanging out with my kids or watching telly, or, you know, all these things I don't get paid for. I'd rather do that. But when I earn money, then yes, to do something that I like doing. And yeah, we forget that a little bit, don't we?
Absolutely. And I just think, I've got three kids. I want them to do exactly what they want to do. I don't want them in a box. You know, I feel like, especially where I'm from, we're put in these boxes. Like, my careers advice, first of all, they did a really fancy thing in Ebervale back in the early 90s, and they told me I could be a shepherd. That was the first careers advice I had. And then when I hit comp, it was like, do you want to be a nurse or a hairdresser? And I was like, I can't think of anything worse, either or. And then maybe do you want to be a teacher? There was nothing, no higher aspirations. You know, like, I haven't got a job title at the moment. I'm literally scrambling around to do, well, I'm not scrambling, to be fair. My voice is doing the work for me, and I'm getting lots of work in different areas now. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And yeah, the key is the rest, though. You know, like when you said, I'd like to hang out with my kids and I like to watch TV, that's rest. And rest is as important as work. So if you don't nail that and you are throwing yourself into work, again, your needs are not being met in balance. So
yeah, and adjusting to that change. When I went self-employed, I mean, I've been self-employed for almost 10 years now, and I still, even now, when I have a day where I find myself doing something really fun in the middle of the day, and I still panic, and I think, like, hang on a minute. I go through this little checklist and I go like, did I earn enough money this month to pay the mortgage? Yes. Have I got some bits coming up next week? Yes. And I have to go through and make sure everything's okay, because it feels so unusual to not be, you know, to not have that work mentality. Yeah. It's something that's like, I suppose I want to mention it, because what I don't want to do here is have me and you sitting here and just saying how great everything is and how all you got to do is go and do a bit of therapy and everything's amazing. And, you know, like there are challenges within the change. There are challenges.
My God, we've missed out a whole chunk of narrative there, you know, like the fear when you know, I didn't know whether I'd be contributing to our bills or not. You know, I was really, really lucky that Scott agreed that we could try. And Scott's got a decent enough job that would have covered us. But they were the first 2 or 3 months were horrific. I was scrambling for work then, thinking, what the hell am I going to do? And again, I've put so much work in over the years, I mean, like graft with everything I'm doing at the moment, you know, like I didn't just wake up and be able to get this work, you know, the networks I've made over the years, the connections I've done over the years, and the writing I've done over the years has all led me to this path. It doesn't happen overnight, you know, and I'm always really conscious of that people make it look like it's happened overnight, when it really hasn't. Just years and years of graft and planning. Like, I've had a couple of failed projects, you know, and failed for whatever reason, and that's fine. I mean, my willingness to fail is one of my other favorite qualities of myself, because I just think I will give anything a go. And I get really frustrated when other people don't do that. Like, Scott's one. Scott would not risk anything. And I'm like, come on! But I totally get it. So it's not have therapy, you know, I have 4 sessions of therapy and life is brilliant. It's been hard work, like even especially the alcohol thing is the hardest thing. I thought breastfeeding was hard, but giving up alcohol is the hardest thing I've ever done, ever. Yeah. And what it does is it'll throw up new challenges. So like, I've had nearly 3 years now, I had 2 brilliant sober Christmases, and this Christmas hit me for 6. I just didn't see the point in Christmas without a drink. Just couldn't see it. So it doesn't matter how much work you do, how wonderful everything is, because it is wonderful compared to what it was, definitely. But it's still bloody hard and it's still shit sometimes. And every single day, I think you could just have one glass of wine now, Han, go on, just have one. But I know it wouldn't be one. And then we'd be in this tangle of chaos again. But it's just work, like I said earlier. It's all work all the time. And it's whether you've got it. And I don't mean whether you've got it in you or not, because there's going to be people listening to this that are absolutely on their ass, that can't get out of bed. And the digging is the hardest bit you'll have to do. And once you've done that, you can see the light. Mm. It's just getting that shovel out.
Yeah, that's it, mate. That's it. I want to whiz back around to this course as well, because that must have been interesting when you signed up to do the course and you start to exploring these things from the inside out, because you can't do that and not look deeper at yourself, right? So you're holding it by learning the system, you're holding a mirror up to yourself. What was that process? Because I mean, you were like going off to London for weekends and stuff, right?
Yeah, that was brilliant. I was at home. That was great. I was having these weeks up in London and Bristol where I was just learning, which again was amazing, because like, if you look at the needs, my privacy need doesn't get met at home. It's, you know, we should always be learning, always. So I've tried to take that forward as well. Like, I'm doing Duolingo and I'm trying to learn. I'm reading different books all the time because we've got to learn. But those weeks, some of them, plain sailing, amazing. Some of them would touch something and I would, I'll give you an example, the self-harm. So I was a prolific self-harmer when I was younger, and it didn't stop. Well, it didn't stop until I stopped drinking, really. And I just thought it was an attention-seeking thing. For years, I told myself that what are you doing? And it was mad because no one ever saw. No one would have known. Like, you can see visible scars, but you wouldn't have known that's from self-harm. And I mean, I'm covered in head to toe. And I just thought I was being a dick, and I really wasn't. And I came from that course and I wobbled so badly. I was like so grateful for the course because I understood exactly what had gone on. And I had a really rough couple of days after, just because I was healing, you know, metaphorically, literally, I was healing. And that was the only one. All the others, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Why don't people know this? But that was the one that really, but I had a brilliant, brilliant tutor, Jo Baker, another one you need to have on it. She's an amazing tutor for Human Givens and does a lot in Derby Uni. And she was fantastic. And I spoke to her in the break and I was like, I'm wobbling a little bit. And she was like, you've got this. You've absolutely got this. And she was just phenomenal. But that was the only one. And I think that's because it's the most shameful one for me. It's the one I'm most embarrassed about. Still, you know, I'm still like, why on earth would anybody want to do that to themselves? And especially to the level that I did. How I'm alive is, you know, I think on two occasions I can think of, I should be dead. But I'm not. And it's something I've carried quite shamefully. And I think that's why. So it's a really like eye opener. Like you literally, I just felt, I kept saying to Joe and Gareth, who was another phenomenal teacher, just kept saying, I feel like my brain's been tin opened and my head's been cleaned. That was the only way I could describe it. And it was like things that I thought were irrelevant, like sort of like the storytelling. I don't know whether Joe touched on this last week.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
The storytelling, I was like, oh my God, like this is my world. Like things that have sort of as well, again, and I'm not blaming my area, but I'm from a deprived valleys town where if you told people a story, you'd be taking the piss off, you know, and sort of metaphorical ways of explaining things are not, because it's not black and white enough. So I was just like, oh my God, things that I've always thought were irrelevant, the language use, you know, when someone picks a word and you think, why did they pick that word? They've picked that word purposely, even if they think they haven't. And it's like, I was just like, oh my God, I was so excited.
Yeah. Oh mate, it's a lovely thing. I wanted to get on with, I mean, actually, before we move on, where are you with the course? Like what stage are you up to? Are you done? Have you got more to do?
I've got my part three to do now. So I'm seeing clients as often as I can. And then I'll do part three, hopefully sometime this year, where it's just, so you're mainly qualified. You've done the diploma. You've just got to get some time on your feet now. And then I'll go back for another week in Bristol. To sort of showcase you do therapy with your other like peers. So I'm hoping to get that done by this year, hopefully. And then I'll be fully qualified. Woo-hoo.
Oh mate. Yeah, such a lovely way to come full circle. Eh? Yeah. I think it's so cool. Yeah. And I wanted to chat about some of the things you've been doing since as well. Because when we spoke, I know, how long have we got, right? When we spoke last time, this stuff was you'd sort of hit the ground running. And it's so many of these things were ideas or were just starting. And, you know, we're further down the line now, but it seems like you're absolutely flying. And I love to see it so much. You inspire me, mate. You really do.
You give me
a kick up the ass. You know, I'm a kind of I have a lot of ideas and I kind of think, I'll get round to that. And then I see you in action and think, oh no, I need to put a bit more Hannah energy behind this one and get it up and running. But I wanted to ask, let's jump in with TID Talks, mate. Tell me all about that. That was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Yeah. So what is it first for people who don't know?
So TID Talks was an event I put on last month where I got, in the end, it was 13 men got up and told a story, whether that be mental health related or not. The key emphasis when I recruited the guys was, I want to make mental health better and more accessible to people in Merthyr. We're in the middle of a pandemic of male suicide in the valleys. Worldwide, male suicide is a big killer at the moment. And it was taking everything again, you know, the needs, the storytelling, the metaphors, the learning through other people. So I put this idea to a great guy in Merthyr Council called Lee Davis. I was like, I've had this idea. And he's like, oh, not again. And I was like, please, can we just try this? So he funded me to put on this event. So 13 men got up, told their stories to a sold out theatre in Merthyr. And the results were phenomenal. So remember when I said earlier, we do this thing where we're like, we're going to fix men's mental health. We're going to. So I was like, I'm going to take that pressure off, okay, because we're not going to fix it at this point. But what we can do is start little ripples. We can start men talking. We can start conversations. And we can start showcasing that it is absolutely okay to be a man and talk about things that you want to talk about. So we had an absolute, completely mental group of men. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. They were all so different. They all brought something completely new to Merthyr.
And how did you find them, Han? Did you put like a call out on your socials? Or?
Yeah, I put a shout out on Facebook basically saying that I was looking for men. There she goes. I was looking for men to talk about anything. So I wanted the idea of like a TED talk, okay? So the idea of TED talks are these like, they're like 20 minute talks of like, and that you like ignite the audience, or you inspire the audience. So I was like, even if they're not directly talking about mental health, they will inspire. And that's what I said. You can either inspire, motivate, or educate. It's up to you. So we had a couple of comedians. You know, we had two comedians and they were great. We had a guy who's like trying to make big change in the world and things like that. We had runners, we had, you name it, there was a dynamic in there. And it was just amazing. It's probably the proudest like work I've done so far, because to have that many, like we sold out, so we had over 100 people in the audience, and we had open and honest conversations happening in a deprived valleys town where historically men don't talk, you know. It was just, and like the little ripples that have gone on, like I know the one guy, he's never stood on stage and done comedy before. And I think Merthyr have booked him for Merthyr Comedy Festival next year because he was great.
Oh, mate.
One of the guys we are, with the work I do in the running shop, we've got an independent running shop in Merthyr called Soulmate. And we are trying to put a charity together where we sort of help people become runners or elevate to the next level. And Carl, one of the guys who spoke, a phenomenal story. His whole, and this has never happened to me before, when he started talking about ultra running, his whole face changed. He looked like a completely different person. Now, I've heard this happens, but I've never seen it in person. And I was like, oh my God, I want to help him. I want to help him hit this goal. So he's going to run a 200-mile race in May with our backing. Like, my coach has come along and he's like offering to help. And the guys at Pegasus Ultra Running Company have given him a space. So we're going to help this guy. So these little ripples started to become bigger little waves. Yeah. And it's just, and again, it's all needs-based. You know, those guys who spoke, they needs to be met on that stage that night. Or if it'd gone horribly wrong, not met on, you know. But that didn't happen, thank goodness. But yeah, it was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it looked really beautiful. The pictures looked really beautiful. I love things like that when you see photos of the audience and you can really see people in it. They're just in it, you know, just hanging on every word and feeling all of it, you know. It's special. Yeah. I think that there's a couple of things there that have been on my mind recently, I think. And one, weirdly enough, today's episode that came out today is with Mark Williams. And he's from Bridgend. And something I talked about with Mark is that how often the big conversations around advocacy and mental health and all the awareness and stuff like that, they tend to happen down south. They tend to happen in London. They tend to be quite celebrity focused, and it's black ties and it's money and it's all this stuff. And I get why that happens. That's where the money is, and there's reach and there's all these things. You know, charities are businesses at the end of the day. Of course they are. But at the same time, when you have all that, that could not be further away than some guy in the valleys or any sort of rural small town, wherever, right? Going about his day-to-day business, struggling with his mental health, and he doesn't know what to do about it. And I think so many people get left out because sometimes the conversation can be a bit glitzy, a bit like, oh, look at this famous person. And it's like, well, I don't care about them because I'm struggling to pay my mortgage, right? You know, like there is that kind of divide a little bit. And the community stuff is important to me. And I just think there is people out there doing these things changing and saving lives, and they're not getting the spotlight that some of the other things are getting, maybe?
I just feel like we keep missing the mark with it as well. And I think it was you, one of your podcasts with the rehearsed narrative. And I think I brought this up last time. Like, I will tell my story now, like it's someone else's story. And that's the problem we've got. You know, like we've got these celebrities getting up and going, I was bulimic, I was suicidal, I was. And I can tell my story now, as simple as that. And you lose it. You lose the passion. You lose the importance of it. And I think by doing little things like this, you're keeping it fresh. Like, we don't know the outcomes of that night. We don't know who we would have helped. We don't know who would have left it. Like, we did have one guy come to us and say, right, I'm going to go sober now. Like, I listened to that, those stories, and I'm going to make a difference. And someone else took up running. So we've got these little bits, but because we can't capture the data, because it's not data, it's not box ticking. You know, I can guarantee there's probably a man that would have left that night thinking, I'm going to change things. I know I can change things because I've just watched 13 men tell me that things can change, things can get better. Things, yeah. You know, there's things available. And it's just, you know, we miss the mark because we're so interested in the corporate side of it. Yeah. And I, you know, that's another thing that I'm going to add into my values along the way as well. Keep it. Yeah, you can go as big as you want. We could have filled the Millennium Stadium. Oh, it's not called that now, whatever it's called now. But we'd lose the mark, you know?
Yeah. Become something different. Yeah. And those ripples change, right? They, for those ripples to work, they have to ripple into something sooner rather than later, or they just die out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something I think about a lot. I had a guest once, Chris Hemmings, and he talked to me about sphere of influence, right? And he said, everybody's got a sphere of influence, and you might have a massive platform, or you might have three people in your sphere. But if you focus on your own sphere of influence, that's how we change things. And that really, you know, because I think probably because social media is such a useful tool for spreading the words, it is really, really easy to start, you know, thinking about reach, and everything's about content. And it's all, and again, you kind of miss the mark, right? Because we're focusing on something that's so big, you're casting the net too wide. But if you focus on the smaller things, the things around you, on your sphere of influence, then that's change. You know, that's how we change the world, I think.
Yeah, these ripples, they are so, so important. And because there's no money in the ripples, and because there's no, you know, clear tick box data at the end of it, people are not interested. And that's because it's had to be that way. It's like, I keep saying this keeps coming up. You know, I mentioned rest earlier and self-care. Self-care is a brand now, right? You buy your self-care, and it doesn't need to be like that. Because if the world switched his perspective on that and said, right, actually, self-care is not a brand. You just need to sit outside for 5 minutes. You need to rest for 2 minutes. You don't need the bubble bath. You don't need that box, that wooden thing that goes over the bath with the candles on. You know, you need rest. You need calm. But our economy would collapse. You know, our economy would completely collapse. Same as if we completely, and I'm not anti-medication, I'm medicated myself. But if we started looking at needs and started looking at the wider picture, our pharmaceutical companies would not be happy, you know? So we'd lose that as well. Like, we're in a horrible, horrible position. We live in a funny old world, you know? Same as social media. Like, our time is their money, you know? We need to keep reading these things. We need to keep seeing the people in the bubble baths with the wooden thing over, you know?
Yeah.
It just works for the above, unfortunately.
That's it. I've been thinking a lot about social media, particularly with like things like podcasting, right? So we've seen this real shift in towards video focused podcasting. And one of the main reasons people do that is because you can chop those up and put them on social media and they go viral, and that brings people back to your podcast. But what it means is, because the Instagram, for example, their algorithm rewards certain things, it means everyone has to do certain things to get this reach that everyone's chasing. So it's like, now everything becomes the same, you know? So it's like, so now, like, everything is not, you know, people aren't thinking about change. People aren't thinking about doing anything different. People aren't thinking, they're thinking, oh, how can I do this like everyone else is doing, so it can behave like everyone else's behaviors and you know, come around full circle. And
The cliche. I hate cliches only because they've lost their power. they've lost the importance. If you hear a cliche, it's like, you know, you lose the meaning of it because you're so used to hearing the words, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. It's yeah, it's a funny, you just got to keep your head down, right? And keep on your, make sure that, that those values you listed before, make sure you're ticking those boxes, do your own thing and stay, you know, stay true to it. And
stay in your own lane. It's a big, big favorite saying in our house, stay in your own lane. Yeah, hard to do, very hard to do.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
But stay in your own lane. And what's meant for you, like I'm not overly woo-woo, but what's meant to you, what's meant for you will come to you, you know, it will. And you are exactly where you're meant to be, doing what you're meant to be doing at that time, however hard it is, you know. I had therapy with someone a bit later after Graham, because I went back for more. I'm one of those. And she said to me, every person you meet is a lesson. And I was like, I like that. And it's true. Every person, every situation, it's all lessons, you know. Our brains are just pattern matching objects that need these lessons to learn, to evolve. So
yeah, that's it, mate. That's it. I want to, before I let you go, I want to chat a little bit about running, because you're with your own running is what I'd like to, because you're working on, you're working towards something at the moment. Can we talk about that? Is that
So I, because as if I haven't got enough on my plate, I'm training for a 100-mile ultra in June. Now, the problem I've got at the moment is whether I'm going to make the ultra, just because my mom had an accident a couple of weeks ago and I'm really reliant on her for childcare. And this, the stuff I'm doing takes up quite a lot of time. So training is tough. I'm there at the moment though. We're on course. I've got a brilliant coach called Stuart Aubrey, and that's the best thing I have ever done. So I've been running for over a decade now, but never had a coach, and he is the best thing hands down that I have ever done, because he takes none of my shit either. So when I'm like, I can't run, he's like, you can't, that's bollocks, because he's just this angry Scottish guy. But he's put a plan together for me, and I'm out in the mountains every weekend, which is doing my mental health the absolute world of good. I was up over the Blorenge yesterday in Abergavenny, and it was all snow down and the sun was out. And I was like, this is what it's about for me. This is what it's about. So I still don't know what I'm trying to prove with a 100-mile race, because I don't need to. I don't need to do a 100-mile race, but there's something in me. I keep saying, like, you never meet a runner who's not running from something, and I'm still trying to work out what I'm running from.
Well, maybe not. So, maybe not anymore. Maybe you're, maybe, you know, maybe just running because it's fun, right? Or just because it's, you know, I'm not sure yet.
It's a big one. It's a big one to take on. I've only ever done a marathon distance. I've done a couple of marathons. So 100 miles is a whole other ball game. Like, I did 15 yesterday. So what we did is we did the checkpoint from checkpoint 2 to checkpoint 3 this week. And then I was just thinking, so the one we did last week, checkpoint 1 to checkpoint 2, I would have had to have done that all together. And it just seems not doable at this point. Stuart tells me that's what everybody thinks. And you won't know until you're there on the day whether you've got 100 miles in you or not. But it's a 50-hour cutoff, so that's 2 miles an hour. But some of those bloody mountains, or mounds of opportunity, as the She Runs Cardiff girls like to call them, they're painful. My legs went, there's a mountain called the Skirrid, and it's pretty much a vertical climb. And my legs went last week, and I was like, my head, and I teach about anxiety now. I do these workshops talking about anxiety. My legs stopped working, and I was like, oh my God, this is my body shutting down. I'm going to shit myself in front of all these people that I don't know now, because I'm actually dying. Someone's going to have to ring Scott. He's going to have to find childcare to come and get me. Only he won't be able to get up the mountain. So I'm going to have to ring my friend Phil Booth, who did mountain rescue once upon a time. And he's going to be fuming because I've ruined his Sunday. And all it was I just had to get to the top. You know, I just had to keep moving. But I went from 0 to 100 in nanoseconds. So it's really funny. It's quite funny being on the other end of, like, knowing exactly what's going on. When I got to the top, I was like, what was that about? What was that all about? Like, you are a dick. But
it's one of the most powerful lessons, though, isn't it? It's like, for a long time, I thought that I would change having episodes like that. Like it would stop for me.
Yeah.
And like, it does get, less, very much so, but it doesn't stop. But the difference is being able to kind of accept it for what it is and deal with it. You know, it's not about stopping these things happening. It's about kind of knowing why they're happening and being able to cope within it. And, you know, it's still, you know, it's all right to lose your shit sometimes, right? It's kind of...
It's all right to lose your shit, not actually shit, though. That's what I was afraid of. I was like, oh my God,
worry.
Shit all over the skidded mountain. And I don't know the girls that well. They've just taken me under their wing, which has been lovely. That's the beauty of running, though. Remember I said, it meets all your needs. You will meet people. And they've taken me under their wing. And this was my first run with them. I was like, oh, they're never going to ask me again because I can't get up this mountain and I'm going to shit everywhere and it's going to be a scene. it's fun though. I'm really enjoying my running for the first time in a really long time. Really enjoying it.
That's nice to hear, mate. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for doing this today.
You're very welcome,
lovely to catch up. It's been long overdue, but like I said before, it's it gives me a lot of pleasure to see you smash it, mate. It's it's a really, really beautiful thing. But thank you for today, and all the best of everything.
See you soon.
A big up to that Proper Mental Podcast. Proper Mental Podcast.